sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Okay, we're in verse 6. Actually, 6 and 7 kind of go together, so we'll chant both 6 and 7. Okay. Sabodho vishayad binnaha, sabodho vishayad binnaha, nabodhat swapna bodhavat, nabodhat swapna bodhavat, evam stana traye pyeka,
evam stana traye pyeka,
samvittadvattinantare,
samvittadvattinantare,
masabdayugakalpeshu,
masabdayugakalpeshu,
gatagamyeshvanekada,
gatagamyeshvanekada,
nodeti nastametyeka,
nodeti nastametyeka,
samvidesha swayam prabha,
samvidesha swayam prabha.
So, sa bodha vishayat binnaha na bodhat swapna bodhavat evam stana traye api eka samvit tadvat dina antare masa abda yuga kalpeshu gata It's going to be like this. Gata agamyeshu anekada. Na udeti nastam iti eka. Na astam iti eka. Samvit esha swayam prabha. Okay. So this first verse, verse 6, kind of picks up where we left off with the deep sleep state, waking dream and deep sleep. So it says, sabodha, that knowledge or that consciousness, vishayat binnaha, is different from the vishaya, from the object of knowledge. Vishaya means an object of knowledge, like this is a vishaya. Any object of knowledge is a vishaya. It also means subject matter. It has different meanings. But here it's meaning an object, like an object of knowledge. So that consciousness in the deep sleep state, referring back, the consciousness that there's in the deep sleep state that's illumining the vishaya here is the ajnan. In deep sleep, consciousness that is there lighting up the ajnan, the big I don't know anything, where there's no subject-object differentiation, there's just an ajnanam. The mind sense organs are in unmanifest condition, right? So there is nothing which is known. So that nothing which is known is what is illumined, right? So that's what we mean, just pure ajnanam. So that consciousness is different, in the deep sleep state, is different from the ajnanam, the ignorance that's being lit up. Okay. But then it says, nabodhat, swapnabodhavat. But it is not different from the consciousness itself that is there, like the consciousness in the dream. So what they're saying is, in the waking state, conscious being illumines the waking state. The conscious being is different than the waking state. There's a subject-object differentiation, in a sense. The consciousness is one, the objects known are many in the waking state. Dream state, same situation. Consciousness is one, the me is one. The things that are experienced are many in the dream state. It's exactly the same in the deep sleep state in the sense that the consciousness, which is one, is differentiated, is different than the pure ajnanam. The ajnanam itself, the ignorance, isn't one or many. It's non-dual in a sense. Within itself, there's no division. It's just one big blob of ajnanam. It is kind of sometimes called the blob, like a blob of ajnanam. There's no differentiation. So that's different. You have differentiated experiences, waking state, differentiated experiences, dream state, but just one mass of ajnanam, gana, it's called a gana, like a mass or a blob of ajnanam, not differentiated in the deep sleep state. But in each three of those states, consciousness remains one, differentiated from the state of experience. So consciousness, waking state, consciousness, dream state, consciousness, deep sleep state. Consciousness remains as one, differentiated from whatever is objectified, whether it be the waking state, the dream state, or the deep sleep state. So what it says, so that being said, it says, evam stanat traye api, it says, in this manner, stanat traye, in the three stanas, the stana means a place of experience, the same as avastha. So if I say the avastha traya, the three states of experience, if I say the stana traye, the three places, the three realms of experience, of stana. So it says, so in this manner, in the waking dream deep sleep state, in all three, eka sambit, there's one consciousness, only one conscious being is there, not two. It's never divided, right? In all three states. And there's also, to understand also, it itself from its own standpoint, it's differentiated from what is objectified, it remains one. Right? But that one consciousness has what we call an anuvritti through all three states, means I can say I, me, this conscious being, am the waker. I am the self of the waker. And I am the self of the dreamer, because it's my dream. And I am the self of the deep sleeper. Because when I wake up out of the deep sleep, I say, I had the most wonderful sleep. I didn't know anything at that time. When I wake up from the dream, I say, I had a dream. You know, it's an amazing dream. Right? So there's recollection, that's smriti. Right? So I have smriti, recollection for the dream, for the deep sleep. That's my deep sleep, it's not somebody else's. Right? It's my dream, it's my waking state. So that means my being. Who this me, who I am, is there present as the self that I know myself to be in all three states. You don't wake up from the dream and say it was somebody else's dream. One other little thing to kind of notice in your own self is that as we go through this cycle, day in and day out, there is no question about your being. Who you are, you know, in terms of this is my dream, this is my waking state, this is my dream, this is my deep sleep. It all belongs to me. I'm saying that as I'm trying to continually bring back the fact that the me that we're talking about, that happens to be the self of the whole universe, but the me that we're talking about is this simple me that I've always known as me, but have superimposed the objectified experience on me. Like, for instance, I'm me, and then I take myself, this me, to be the mind, to be happy, to be sad, to be all of these objectified experiences that actually come and go. But the me that I say is having these experiences is the me that we're talking about. There's not some other me. So the me, if I say I had a dream last night, that me, you know, I now become the dreamer, but that's because I'm superimposing the dream experience onto me. So the me doesn't change, right? Me stays as me, but because of ignorance, I've taken myself to wear these different dresses, these various costumes, one costume after another. I say costume or dress, and the Shruti says that too in the Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, you go through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime discarding these bodies as though they were dresses. Right? So the upadis, these conditioning adjuncts, they're really dresses because I'm wearing these clothes, but these clothes are not changing me. They're clothes. What if I took myself to be the clothes? You know? But I'm not the clothes. So if I take myself to be the clothes, I'm taking me, I'm making me be something that I'm not. Right? I still say stay me, but now I'm superimposing these clothes on me. See what I mean? The me experience is exactly the same, but now it's also as the addition of the qualities of these clothes. So it's the same with your mind. Whatever thoughts, moods, emotions, feelings, perceptions you have in the mind, those are like dresses. And then you take yourself to be the dress. You know, or actually, these thoughts and emotions, they're just coming and going and coming and going. They don't stay. You know, you stay. So how can you be them? You know, I am this dress as long as I'm wearing it. Even that's ridiculous. If I say like this, I'm wearing this dress, I am this dress. I'm going to take that. I'm taking this dress off, I've got a new dress on, now I'm this dress. This is not how it is. But we just have to have a mirror. You have to have a mirror held up to yourself so you can recognize the fact of it, you know. And so when we go to the waking dream deep sleep, what's beautiful about that is we're going through the whole spectrum of our day. These are the three major experiences that we have on a 24-hour period. And each one is different than the others. There's a lot of different things happen in the waking state, but it's the waking state. You're experiencing it through your sense organs. Many different types of dreams are happening, but they're dreams, right? They're all going to the category of dreams. It's all different kinds of dreams, but they're all dreams. Deep sleep state is the same. There's all different types of deep sleep states. See, like you could be unconscious, would go into the deep sleep. You could be in a coma, that would go into deep sleep. Anytime in anesthesia, you're really in a deep sleep. It means that the mind and sense organs are withdrawn. That's what we mean by deep sleep. Now, in the waking state, sometimes you're in a dream state. In the waking state, in the sense that you're on a waking dream. You're not using your sense organs. Your mind is awake, doing whatever it's doing. You know, we have so many experiences that is a dream state that's taking place in the waking state because you're not utilizing your sense organs. You're in your own world. So we take these three experiences, waking, dream, deep sleep, for the 24-hour cycle. But actually, in the waking state, like say you doze off, you're just immediately in that little dozing off, you're in the deep sleep state. Say you're, you know, going through the jiva srishti. Your sense organs, you're not attached to your sense organs. That's dream state. So these are the conditions that are available to us. So we use the broad ones, the waking, the dream, the deep sleep. But know that even in the waking state, you're going through these different conditions. You never doubt that it is you going through these conditions. You are never negated by the conditions, but you take yourself to be the conditions that come and go. But that's the thing. The mind knows how to differentiate between experiences, objectified experiences. This is a good experience, this is a bad experience. Or I did this, and then I did this, then I did this. I thought this, then I thought this, then I thought this. They're all different. They're all put up. They're all differentiated from each other. But we seem to need a means of knowledge to do kind of the depth differentiation where I recognize that there is me, one non-dual free being that is the conscious being that lights up all these differentiated experiences. We're very good at differentiating experiences in the world, in the dream state, in the deep sleep state. We're excellent at it. Our sense organs, our means of knowledge are given to us to do just that. There's no limitation there. But why should your mind, which whenever it is up, enjoying consciousness, why should the mind just say, I'm not really the conscious being? Why should it say that? If it does say that, There's some sort of subject-object. That's we call grace. That's grace. Because there's no need for you to do that. Your identity of yourself is taken care of every moment of the day. The ahankara just identifies with what you're doing. I'm a teacher. I'm a student. I'm a wife. I'm a mother. I'm a sister. I'm a father. I'm a brother. I'm a son. You know, I'm an employee or I'm an employer, whatever. I'm a friend. I'm a friend to my friend. I'm a daughter to my mother. I'm a sister to my sister and brother. You know, I'm a teacher to my students. I'm a student to my teachers. Just, yeah, it's immediate. You know, I'm fat or I'm thin or I'm heavy or I'm well. This is the ahankara, always busy. It always has a, immediately has a place to land. Even verbally, I'm relaxing, I'm working in the fields, I'm doing whatever I'm doing. I'm always ahankara, the I is always taken care of. The mind doesn't even have time to think about it. It's always, yourself is always labeled within duality, right? The ahankara landing here and landing there. Because the mind is always, the mind, body, the subtle body, you know, is always feeling this body, mind, sense organ, so it enjoys consciousness. So why shouldn't that be me? The thought doesn't need to come. It does not need to come, you know. But then it comes. Like, who am I really? That's the big who am I question. My mother, I've told my mother when I got talking a little bit too much to her, you know, after when I got back. And you know, if she thinks, who am I, question? She just wanted to end the conversation because it was kind of freaking her out. It was kind of like, do I have some serious problem? So she just said, honey, I don't have that problem. I know very clearly who I am. I know who I am. I'm your mother. I'm your mother. You know, that's who I am. I'm your mother. This is my world, you know, taken care of. There's nothing in her that wanted to hear anything else. No interest even. No interest whatsoever. The interest need not be there. So this differentiation, we have all the means of knowledge to do that, but there is no real reason that the mind gives us to go any further than the ahankara, what the ahankara lands on. Ahankara is that I notion. Wherever it lands, it always has some way to label me. You know? So to come to that who am I question, or what is this really about, we say that's Ishwara Anugraha, the grace of Bhagavan, grace of God. After lifetimes in the Viveka Chudamani, after lifetimes and lifetimes of punya, your mind gets the space, some shanti, that allows for that type of introspection to become actually a mumukshu. Need not. So now it ends this verse saying, so not only do we see that the consciousness, that one consciousness which is non-dual from its own standpoint, as being the self of the waker, and then the dreamer, and then the deep sleeper, there's one self there, itself which is only one, it's not a multiplicity. For there's a multiplicity in the waking and dream, and then just pure agana, massive ajnanam in the deep sleep. Then he says, tadvat, like that, dina antare, in other days also. It's not just the waking, dream, deep sleep. This is today. There was yesterday. Yesterday is a different day than today, and the day before, and the day before, and the day before. I was the one present to yesterday. Yesterday's gone. It's not here anymore. And in fact, the person that was here yesterday isn't really the person that's here today in terms of body, mind, sense organs. Everything's in flux. But day after day after day, say I go back 1,000 days, you know, it's still me. That was my experience, and the previous day was my experience, and the previous day was my experience. And my experience, when I say my experience, we have to look at what actually is being experienced. It's as radical as going from waking state to dream state. It's as radical, because what I experience here at this moment is this world through my sense organs. Through my sense organs, this body is experienced, objectified. Right? My sense organs are objectified. I know if I can see or I know if I can't see, or if my vision is blurry or getting worse. The sense organs are objectified. I know if I can hear. Whatever thoughts are going in my mind, I'm aware of those. Those are experiences. They're experiences because subject-object. I'm aware of them. They're known and they come and go and they change. All of my moods and emotions, they're experienced. They're known. They come and go and they change. I don't come and go. I'm the conscious being that illumines all of that that's coming and going. That's for today. That's for this moment. What about, 10 minutes ago? What about an hour ago? What about yesterday? It's the same thing. There's only one conscious being that is present to these ever-changing experiences. I can go second by second, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day. It doesn't make any difference. Same thing. There's one conscious being, me, that is illumining the changing experiences. That include not only this world external to the body, but the body. The changing experiences of the body, of the prana, of the sense organs, of the thoughts, moods, emotions, of the ahankara. The ahankara keeps landing on different things. So I can go moment to moment or I can go day by day. Same situation is there. There's a subject that is one and an object that is continually changing. And so then in the next verse he moves on. So for here he says, it's the same with other days, day by day by day. Then he says, also, masa means month, months. Abda means years. Yuga, like the Kali Yuga, there's four yugas. There's the Satya Yuga, the Treta Yuga, the Dwapara Yuga, and the Kali Yuga. Each yuga, the first yuga is something like a million something years. And then there's four yugas, and the next one's a little less than that. And the next yuga is less. These are periods of time within that whole Indian astrological system. There are four yugas, and they take up thousands of years. Okay, and then there's kalpas, and there's 1,000 yugas in one kalpa. Okay. So the four yugas together are some more than a million or 2 million years, human years, and then one kalpa is a day in the life of Brahmaji, which is 1,000 yugas. Yeah. Then there's a Mahayuga. So what it's saying is, okay, we'll take moment by moment, day by day, month by month, year by year, yuga by yuga, kalpa by kalpa, same situation. Consciousness is one, illuminating whatever is being objectified throughout time, throughout all states of experience. Time goes on changing. All of the things that are being objectified go on changing, from the most innermost things that can be objectified, like for instance your moods, your emotions, the ahankara itself, these are objectifiable, all the way out to the experience gained through your sense organs. Going back any amount of time, it's the same situation. The self remains one, illumining that which is, by its nature, bound by time and continually changing. So here it says, masa, the months, abda, years, yugas, the period of time, and kalpas, and those kalpas, gata agamyeshu, in those which are those yugas, etc., which have gone past, of the past, and those that agamya will be coming. Agamya means they're going to be coming. So all of these periods of time, of the past, and also into the future, so the past and future, and ekada, all many and varied, continually changing, So in all of these, na udeti, na astameti, eka samvit esha. It says, this one consciousness. Eka, esha means this. Eka, this one Samvit consciousness, this one consciousness, neither sets or rises. Na udeti, it doesn't rise up like the sun rises up and then sets. Consciousness neither rises nor sets. It is what it is. Your being is constant, timeless, changeless, not going through any modification at all. And so it's not an object within time and space. It's the one, it's the very adhishtana, the very being in which time and space take place, right? It's the presence of the present. In fact, you never experience anything out of the present. You cannot move one inch, one iota, you know, out of the present. You remember the past in the present. You imagine the future in the present. But try to get yourself out of the present. Everything, you are the presence, your being is the presence of the present. And really, the only thing that you experience is the present. Memories are taken in the present. Imaginations, projections, in the present. Any type of inner work you do, it's in the present. Any type of thoughts, any thinking that you do, it's always in the present. And the present, if you were to try to analyze the present, you can't find it. You can't find within time. If you analyze, try to find the present within time, you can't find it, because time is infinitely divisible. You can always blow up time and have more moments. You can blow up, take one, blow up the moment, more moments. Blow up a moment, more moments. It's an infinite regress. But in all of those moments, you are the presence. Your presence is ultimately the present. That present is timeless being. Timeless being is really the present. Any present that you try to find out here is divisible. You can go any length of magnitude and infinite length, magnitude, and infinite in terms of small, tiny moments. But the moments can always be divided. As long as the moment takes up time. If it doesn't take time, then okay, you're in the present. That's who you are. Right. So, what he says here is, in all of these periods of time, you know, those that have gone by and those that will come, the Atman, the Self, never rises or sets. The one conscious being that you are, this consciousness, this being, it never rises, it sets and sets. And also, it is Swayam Prabha. It is self-luminous. Self-luminous means consciousness doesn't need another consciousness to light it up. You know, just think about it, even when you're contemplating, you're kind of withdrawing from all of these sense objects and whatnot, and you're withdrawing your mind, then you just are. Oops, it's all dark. The lights have gone out. No lights have gone out. Right? No lights have gone out. Your being is self-luminous. It is its own self-luminous experience. You can't shut down consciousness. It's not an object in the world to be able to do anything to. Now, consciousness is not objectifiable for you to be able to shut it off or change it or put a bag over it. It always is just exactly as it is. So your being, this me, this very personal me that you are, if you go back, you know, a million kalpas, or go forward a million kalpas, in inimaginable time, there's no time for you. You are not getting old. You would be very old by now. You're not getting old. You're not getting old. You simply are. So this me that you are is the me that you are. And it's the me that you take yourself to be, which is so important. Because even when you're gaining a knowledge like Vedanta, you can think, well, it's nice to be Brahman and everything, but I want me, I want to be me. So there's some infinite consciousness. Well, that's nice, but what does that have to do with me? Well, the infinite consciousness is you. The me that you take yourself to be but don't realize. You don't realize that this you are in fact timeless and changeless and really the very being of the whole creation. You don't know that. All you know that it's you. But you could say, I'm me, but oh, if I'm this body, if this me is this body, then when this body dies, I'll die. So I hope it's not the body, because I don't want to die. So maybe there's some heaven and hell words, or maybe there's reincarnation, then that where I will actually continue. Then I'll think, yeah, but if it's reincarnation and somebody's going, it's not me, but I don't care about that. I want to live. I want to be the one who reincarnates. I want to be the one who goes to heaven or wherever. You know, if it's some soul, I don't care. Unless that soul is me, it's meaningless to me. You know, unless Brahman is me, it's meaningless. I don't care about it. And so that's why it's important to understand that the Upanishads are actually talking about the me that you do care about. The realization that takes place, if we want to call it like that, it goes something like, oh, that they're actually talking about me, the me that I've always known myself to be, and I didn't realize how that I'm free, that nothing will ever happen to me. Because it's easy to get abstract. So you have to always bring it home. In meditation, you have to always come home to the me that you know to be me, and then you start undressing it. Because you've taken yourself to be you, but now you've identified with all these clothes, so you have to take clothes off and say, oh, I'm actually free, completely free. So why don't we stop there? The next two verses actually go into the ananda aspect of it. It's very beautiful.
And also in one of the previous verses, it talks about having memory of the deep sleep state.
Yeah.
So it seems like both of those things imply that the mind isn't in total unmanifest condition, that there's a part of the mind that's still manifest.
Not exactly like that. The mind and the sense organs are, so you have to kind of go into the nature of Maya. That is, Maya is composed of three gunas strands that we call sattva, rajas, and tamas. So these these are the three strands of Maya. That's what Maya is. Only sattva, the sattva Maya reflects consciousness, or in that sattva consciousness manifests. Okay. In rajas is like all of the prana, all types of activity and energy, all of that goes into rajas. And tamas is what's responsible for the kind of the solidity of name and form for nama rupa. That's tamas. So the sattva is by its nature reflective. Okay, so now when the antakarana, which is made of sattva, is active, then all of this knower known and all of this duality is taking place. But when the sattva is now totally inactive, it's totally withdrawn, it's still sattva, and still the stuff of a vritti. Now, the thing is, in deep sleep, the sattva is completely withdrawn into its causal condition, ajnanam. And so now awareness is illumining that condition of the vritti material that has been withdrawn. It's still the sattva. So now that vritti material is awake, in the waking state, and then you have a memory of what that was like when everything was withdrawn, when the sattva is withdrawn, not into its own causal condition. That's why. The same thing is the sattva in sadhik, so we've got deep sleep where it withdraws into its causal condition, and then we have like nirvikalpa samadhi or samadhi, mm-hmm. where the sattva is also completely withdrawn. right, from nama-rupa, but it is awake. It's not withdrawn into its causal condition. It's awake. But now there's no experience of anything that's objectified. So they're similar in a way. But one is, instead of being resolved into the Atma, it resolves into itself. So awake, it resolves into the Atma. Here it resolves into itself. And that, when it goes, the same sattva goes into the waking state, with, when it's awake, then I can remember that at the time of deep sleep, all that is there is ajnana, because I illumined that state. And the same material is what's being illumined, as in the waking state or dream state. But one is active and one isn't. Does that make sense?
So is there a trace of memory in that unmanifest state that allows you?
No, that's not it. It's that the antakarna itself, the mind itself, goes into, which is sattva, okay? It goes into its causal condition. So it, that mind, is not having a memory, it's not having a perception, it's not functioning. It's in causal condition. So it's just abiding there, not functioning, not identified with the brain or the active brain or the sense organs. It's all totally withdrawn. Right? So there's no memory, nothing taking place. But that state of mind, so remember this, the one who went to sleep is the one who wakes up. Right? So the waking state and the dream state and the deep sleep state are all part of one jiva. One awareness illumines all three states, but it's also, when I go to deep sleep, this jiva with these memories and with these experiences is the one who wakes up. It's not some other jiva. And so there's a relationship. The antakarna is the same, but the antakarna is going through a different experiences. One is the waking state. One is the dream, where just a lot of things, you know, vasanas, you know, and impressions, samskaras and vasanas are being expressed. And in the deep sleep, it's just at rest, but still the same antakarna, right? And so when you wake up, usually when you're in a dream state, unless it's a lucid dream, there's no waker saying, oh, I'm dreaming. You know, that's a lucid dream. It's possible to have that, where you're kind of awake. In your dream, the waker is awake to the dream. So you can actually, people practice to gain that ability to do that. But unless you're lucid dreaming, you're just in the dream state. There's nobody saying, oh, I'm the waker who's now dreaming. You're just simply in the dream state. So then it's from the waking state, right, that you say, I dreamt. Because you're remembering that experience. In the same way, in the deep sleep state, you're remembering that experience. The experience of what? The experience of not knowing anything. Of pure ajnana. You know? So it's hard if you want to try to figure out the science of it. Mm-hmm. I would just go, because then you have to really understand the sattva, rajas, and tamas, which is okay. But I would just try to understand it first just on an experiential level. You know? The way, the, what, that people have difficulty with that also. You can understand the waking state on an experiential level. You can understand the dream state on an experiential level. But we are not used to experiencing nothing. You know? But if you recall it like this, when you're dreaming, you're not saying I'm dreaming. You're not knowing that the waker is dreaming, unless it's a lucid dream. You're just simply dreaming. And you remember and differentiate the dream state from the waking state when you're awake. Right? It's the same in the deep sleep state. You know, when you're deep sleeping, there's nobody there to be have a running commentary. In the dream state, nobody's really having a running commentary either, unless it's a lucid dream. The dream is the commentary. There's no waker saying, oh, look, I'm dreaming. And there's no waker saying, nor can they be saying, oh, look, I'm deep sleeping. So it's only from the waking state that you're making that type of differentiation. So How are you making that differentiation or even talking about it from the waking state? How can you talk about your dream from the waking state? Because you have a memory of it. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can relate the dream and you can do dream analysis. Right? How can you talk about the deep sleep from the waking state? Only because you have a memory of it, you know. And sometimes people have a lot of difficulty with that because they feel in the dreams, in the deep sleep state, I'm not there. Because the consciousness is so identified with the knower known, right? And if knower known isn't there, I'm not there. Yeah? But the me is there, but the mind is not. There's no running commentary. Your me is always there. There's never any type of shift in that at all. But in the deep sleep state, when the mind is in its causal condition, there's no one saying, you know, I'm there. There's no one saying it, nor is the experience really of anything, because it's ajnana. It's ignorance that's being experienced.
I have a question about that, about the pure ajnana, the pure ignorance of the deep sleep state. Are you using that word, that phrase, pure ignorance, to mean there's consciousness plus what you're calling pure ignorance, and then in the dream state there's consciousness plus the perception on how perceiving works as a dream, and in the waking state there's consciousness plus the waking perceiving. Why are you calling that more ignorance than the other two? Or
that's
not
a good question. It's because there's one term I'm trying to think of right now. I'll think of it later. I'll just tell you in English. In Panchadashi, they actually break this down in Chapter 7 in a really beautiful way. In the deep sleep state, there's just self-ignorance without the ignorance projecting. You know, like, say, for instance...
But the other ones also have that same self-ignorance, but they're projecting.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I understand. Okay, that's what I wanted to
A good example, yeah, yeah. So the ignorance is there in all three states, but in the waking and dream, the adhyasa, the projection is going on.
So when you say, when you say just pure ignorance, you don't mean just as opposed to the other two, you mean the absence of this other thing. That's what you mean by just.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Got it. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Got it. Not just like more, just without the other things.
Yeah, one example they use for this that I like actually, and this goes to Swamiji, he'll say, you know, pure ignorance is bliss. Mm-hmm. Say this is a story he'll tell about this. Say you're walking along a path at dusk, and there happens to be a rope lying along the path, okay? But you don't see it. Mm-hmm. You're walking along, you don't see it. So that rope, there's pure ignorance of that rope, there's no problem there. But what if you're walking along the path and you see it, kind of see it? You see the shape of it, the length of it, but you don't see the ropeness of it. When you don't see the ropeness of the rope, then you can project on that rope anything. It could be a snake, it could be a crack in the earth, it could be a stick. Anything that could be a semblance of that shape can be projected on it if you don't see the rope itself. And so, for us, the self-ignorance is there until it's removed. Right? But when the mind is totally in its causal condition, there is no problem. You're just your being, and no problem. But it's total ajnanam, right? There's no projection going on, it's just ajnanam, ignorance in its unmanifest condition. But in the dream state and the waking state, that ajnanam is projecting. Because we say that ajnanam, ignorance, has twofold capacity. One is what we call avadana. It covers whatever, like the rope is covered. And vikshepa, projection. So it's not just you're going to have pure ignorance where just the avarana, the covering, is there, like in deep sleep. But ignorance also has this projecting capacity, you know. And that projecting a capacity is almost always a problem.
Well, you start suffering.
Well, it's a problem because the projection is not the same as what's actually there. Right? Like the snake is not the rope. And so if I'm trying to, if I'm relating to the rope, if I'm relating to the snake, you know, I'm going to have a whole different experience. Mm-hmm. Emotional experience. Mm-hmm. What I'm seeing there is a snake. There's not really a snake there. But my whole life, my whole emotional system, everything is about the snake. When I see the rope, that whole maya, that whole projection that was born of ajnana goes, right? And now my reality is the rope. It's similar with self-knowledge. If the self-ignorance is there, in deep sleep, if the self-ignorance is there, is in deep sleep, it's only time when you have no problem. But in the waking state, in the dream state, when the vikshepa, when the projection is there, then yourself is very much there as what we call the adhishtana, the truth of what is actually there, the very being of the projection. Right? But you're living out the projection because that is what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
Without a knowledge of the adhishtana, of what is actually there. So it's a crazy thing, you know? It's like you become subject to death and to sorrow and to everything that is inimical to who you actually are. When actually you're whole and free and the ananda that you seek is your own being, and there's no death for you, there's no time, there's no change. The very everything that you want to gain out of the creation is your own being, you know? And so, but once you know that, then this projection is fine. Because the projection is not subjective. With a rope snake, that's subjective. Projected, you know, I could see the rope and you could be seeing the snake. It's subjective. This creation is objective. This body, mind, sense organs is part of the objective manifestation. It's part of Ishvara. Ishvara doesn't have a jnanam. For Ishvara, this is getting maybe too much for you a little bit, but anyway. Do it anyway, it'll take a minute. Okay? Ishvara means Brahman, your own being, with this maya, upadi, the maya, projects the infinite universe, cyclically projects it. For Brahman, because being the whole, there's no ignorance, there's no limitation there. There's just me, Brahman, plus this infinite projection of the universe in all aspects and all levels. That's Brahman. It's only vikshepa, maya only is projecting. But for every jiva within the creation, within that infinite projection, there's not only the vikshepa, there's the avarana, the covering. Because your mind is limited, your sense organs are limited, the sukshma subtle body is located in this physical body, and so for all practical purposes, you enjoy, you are the same conscious being, but now in this kind of limited upadhi, you're looking around within the creation, you know, gaining knowledge within the creation. So as far as you're concerned, you are a being existing in this creation, gaining knowledge of what's going on in the creation, walking around, talking, you know, having birth and death, all these things. That's all you know. And how are you going to know otherwise? You need to have a means of knowledge that comes and holds a mirror up to you, because your sense organs can't kind of flip around and look at the one who's illuminating them. You know? And so what is just vikshepa, the projecting power of maya for Ishvara, is avarana, is a covering power for the jiva. See what I mean? And so what has to happen is that avarana, that covering, which is what we call ajnanam, it's not a real covering, you know, it's self-ignorance, needs to be removed. And then, as long as I have the prarabdha, the karma has to live itself out, then I'm just walking around in myself. Because Ishvara is me. My being is me. Ishvara is me because Ishvara is a projection, a manifestation of me.
So the projection's never not a problem. But you see clearly that's what it is. Maya it, just is Maya.
It's not a problem except that this body will suffer its death, you know, and then the suffering of other beings causes pain to you. But in a sense, it's not a suffering because it's objectified. They say even Ishvara, from the Ishvara Upadhi, even though there's no for Ishvara, there's no identification with any given thing because it's the whole, still there's what's called, this is in the Brahma Sutras, there's a lesha. It's just a little bit of suffering, because of the suffering of all beings. You know? And so for you, there's no suffering in terms of your being or your mind creating sorrow for yourself. Mm-hmm. But pain is pain. Mm-hmm. Physical pain is physical pain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The loss of loved ones, the suffering of the beings in the world that we experience. Mm-hmm. You know, is hurtful.
Yeah. Do you see that in Swamiji?
Yeah. Yeah, but there's not a buildup.
That kind of empathy?
Yes.
Yeah, oh. Empathy, yeah. Tremendous empathy.
Yeah.
In fact, when I was there, I was talking to him about a little bit about something that had come up around all the farm animals and all the suffering that's going on with the animals. And I started to tell him about one thing that was really, actually, really disturbing for me. So I just started to tell him, he goes, "Don't tell me." Yeah, it's up and he doesn't know. He knows it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like that too. I can only take so much.
You're a lot like that.
Because it's so painful.
It is.
It's painful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Once I saw Swamiji, he told me this. He told me this story, and I don't know if there's some of us there. He was telling the story that he was going somewhere to some sort of a talk. I think it was in, I think it was actually in Coimbatore. He was going somewhere in Coimbatore. And they came to a crossing. There was a big traffic jam, right? And Swamiji saw that these cows were all shoved into this truck. And they were being taken to slaughter. And that's illegal. They were doing something illegal, you know? And so Swamiji had the driver, he called the police right now, because they couldn't move, these people couldn't move because of the traffic jam.
Yeah.
Called the police. And so the driver called the police. And they were, Swamiji said, we were able to give him a little more time.
Mm-hmm.
At least for the time being, we can save those cows.
So that's when the Brahma Sutras say there's a speck of suffering.
Yeah, definitely.
That's
the suffering of other beings. You have empathy, you know.
It's part of Ishvara Srishti.
Yeah. It's part of Bhagavan.
Mm.
You know, if you build up and build up, then you get into Jiva Srishti and all that. But to say that these, you do have feelings, and I think your heart opens up more, more and more.
Well, it is very hard to hold. I mean, to see that.
Yeah.
It's hard. It is hard to see it. We have to do every little thing we can. That's what Swamiji does. He says, he doesn't do every little thing. He says, I do whatever I can. And he has a big footprint. But he really does do. He knows important people and all this, and he does.
Yeah.
He does it, you know. But we all have whatever footprint we have, you know, whatever influence we have, whatever our sphere of life is, and we just do. We do what we can, even if they're little things. It doesn't matter. If you're doing little things, there's going to be a million other people that have decided to do those little things. It really does matter.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we think that we're just totally insignificant, but I don't think that's the right way to think. Because we contribute to a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
You say 10% of the population, once it gets its mind made up about something, just spreads like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
And also
wow.
Things go in waves, you know. So what I always think like this, if something comes to my mind to do an action, that's a wave passing through and I'm included in that wave of consciousness. And so you just have to grab those. When those waves pass through, you just grab them. And you'll be one of a million or more people that are grabbing the same thing that matters.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that samadhi is a little bit different from the three states. Is that ever addressed?
Mm. You know, in the Mandukya Upanishad, the whole thing is about this, really. There's the waking state called Virat and Vishwa. Then the dream state, Hiranyagarbha, Nityajasa, and the deep sleep state is Ishvara and Prajna. And then there's the Turiya, the fourth state, which is the Atma. So our mind, the mind is usually only engaged in these three states. But in samadhi, the mind is resolving into the Atma, right? And so it's resolving into Turiya, either through meditative experience or through the process of gaining knowledge. It's awake to Turiya, to the Atma, to the fourth state. It's called the fourth state because it can be differentiated from the other three, even though it's really the self of all the other three. You can differentiate them. So because you can differentiate them, that your mind can, instead of being engaged here, it can just resolve into its own being. And that's called Saddhikalpa Samadhi. If it resolves into its own being and keeps some awareness, subject-object awareness. And Nirvikalpa, when that subject-object awareness is overwhelmed. And then there's just, the experience is only just of myself. Even though there's what we call an Adisukshma Vritti, a very subtle Vritti that's still there.
But the fourth is not really a state.
It's not a state, but we acknowledge it because it can be differentiated from those three states, even though it's the truth and self of all of those states.
So Turiya is equivalent Atma?
Turiya means literally the fourth.
Oh, okay.
So it's called the fourth in reference to the waking, dream, and deep sleep.
So as a yoni, is it differentiated still?
Always differentiated. But, yeah, so for a jnani, there's the Turiya. We use the Turiya in the Mandukya Upanishad to differentiate Brahman from the waking, dream, and deep sleep.
Oh.
Right? It's differentiating. Because Brahman, non-dual conscious being, is always present, free of the waking, dream, and deep sleep.
Right, so in that sense, it's never differentiated, meaning it's always there, but it's differentiated in the sense that it
can be differentiated from each one of those, even though it's ever present.
But, in your experience, as you're walking through your day, how is your experience different than what you're calling Turiya?
Turiya is just a word. It's
just
a word that means the fourth. And it's used in the Mandukya to differentiate the waking, dream, and deep sleep from Brahman. So, for you, say if you have knowledge, yourself is always differentiated. Right? So, say you're walking around seeing using your sense organs. There's the waking state there, and you, upon which the waking state depends. But that differentiates. Dream state, you. Deep sleep, you. Mm-hmm. Right? So the you is not something that doesn't come and go.
And it seems like it's also a different language. It's the satya mitya without using that language.
It is. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What did you say?
It's acknowledging satya mitya because Brahman, as the fourth, is always present. It's like Brahman, as Swamiji will say, it's like Brahman is the dollar bill and these other things are the four quarters. You know, really, there's only one thing there.
I've been studying kind of a way of articulating all this where it ends up with, after all the drifting vacant and all that stuff, it ends up with awareness is the only substance.
Absolutely.
So in that sense, there's no differentiation. It's all. Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what Sri said is exactly what it is. This whole Mandukya Upanishad is really explicating Satya Mitya. They don't use those words, but that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Where this waking state really is only, as for its substance, its being consciousness, as the dream has only consciousness for its being, deep sleep has only consciousness for its being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a teaching methodology.
All of them are teaching methodologies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Mitya isn't even Mitya in the sense of if all there is Brahman.
Why we say this is Mitya
is
because it has no independent being of its own at all. Zero.
Right.
Yeah. I like clay pot, the clay pot analogy.
I remember the moment when that clicked for me for the first time in your teaching. It was
that's perfect. Whoa, so, wow,
I
that's the biggie.
I went around trying to tell everybody. I'm like, no, yeah, I'm here on the rooftops, there's only clay, don't you see?
You know, there's also this
did
urge.
I did that with you.
It's a big one to see. It's a huge.
There's also this urge to learn a catechism, and then if you can say this formula, that it leads to understanding. Mm-hmm. And if you go through the list, and then you got it.
Yeah. But that's really up to the teacher also to make clear that it's a pramana and how to listen. Because in school, we're used to listening to things, accruing information, taking notes, studying the material, being able to regurgitate it on a test, that type of thing. But here the listening is different because it's really pointing to yourself. So you have to learn how to listen. That's all part of the teaching.
Yeah.
And that's it.